Welcome to Forward, a podcast by EasyCare, where we protect what moves you with your host, Corey Smith. The views and opinions expressed by guests in this podcast may not be those of the host or EasyCare and Appco Holdings Brands.
Welcome to Forward. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fixed Operations Training Manager with EasyCare. Please welcome my guest, Alec. Alec, thank you for being a part of Forward. How are you today?
Doing great. It's been a lot of different irons in the fire with the company, with Kia. A lot more EV vehicles coming.
All right. Well, let's talk about that, Alec. Tell our audience a little bit about you, your title, where you work, and how you got in the business.
Actually, probably easier. I got into the business not being allowed to touch tools with my father growing up.
There you go.
Graduated college in the recession and could either go to a grain mill or go into the automotive business. And I went automotive and started in the tire business with Western Auto. Transitioned from parts of America, which is what they ended up being, to Honda. And Honda was my bread and butter for probably 20 years of 30 so far. And been an advisor. I've been a body shop foreman at a semi-truck facility.
Wow.
I have done, so I can do an estimate there. And I'm able, now I've been had an opportunity to go back into being a service manager. And really like the rat role because it's being able to coach kids and coach adults to be better forms of themselves.
What dealership group do you work for?
I work for Fowler Automotive Group.
Oh,
and
nice.
Came back, started with their Honda store and came back for a buy sell with the Kia franchise. And I just transitioned about 4 months ago to their first Kia store.
Awesome. Well, that's a huge resume, Alec. I appreciate you being here. This podcast is right in your wheelhouse. It's going to be titled United Front, Building Collaborative Teams within the Service Department for 2025 and beyond. So let's just jump right into it, Alec. Service departments often operate in silos between advisors, technicians, parts teams. What are the first steps that you can tell us that made you great and break down these barriers and foster true collaboration?
It's been kind of interesting. When I grew up, you really always felt like you were dependent. And I was always taught that as an advisor, I was totally dependent upon my technicians for providing me the information and a good enough story to sell repairs to the customer. I didn't know what an alternator, I heard the word alternator, but I didn't understand what it did or that it worked through a computer and things like that. So I was always going back into the shop and bugging a technician saying, can you explain this to me? And so I don't think advisors give enough credit to the technicians to go back and ask questions. Techs are willing to explain anything. If they had to explain it three times, then they get a little frustrated with you, but they're definitely willing to explain it and provide the information. And so you being a good steward of their time by providing them good write-ups and detailed information so that they can do their job quickly and be productive, be productive. But I think it's just a matter of communication, being willing to get into other conversations, not just business all the time. You got to know if they got a kid. You got to know if they're married. You got to know what's going on with them and what makes them happy and engaged. And you got to play to those things also. Just like as a manager, I got to know what's going on with my advisors so I can communicate and press the right button as far as what's keeping them from reaching their potential also. But communication, communication, communication. It's the thing that customers hate for a lack thereof. And it's what can kill a drive and kill a shop.
Yeah, so that's the first step. Okay, communication, breaking down that barrier between technician and advisor or advisor in sales or advisor in parts department, yep. Right? That's I love that. Okay. So technicians, since we're talking about techs, they are the heart of the service department. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Yet they often feel undervalued. How can leaders ensure that the techs feel appreciated, heard, and that you care about their success?
So one of the things I learned in school was management by walking around, and truly believe that as part of my base operation. I walk my shops. I have two different buildings, and I want to make sure that a technician sees me out in the shop I may not stop by every single technician and say hi, but I make myself available if they want to talk to me. And it's not about what I want from myself. It's about what I want my technicians to know, that they have the ability to reach out to me and that I'm available to them whenever I'm walking around. I'll always stop what I'm doing and I'll always bend an ear and listen to what they have. You never know. Something's going to come out of their mouth. You're just like, I'd never thought of it that way. And it can give you some ideas and some insight as far as where you have roadblocks that you didn't even realize you had, or what's a potential upcoming problem, and as far as stocking part or whatever. And you got to take their input into it. I think that if you're doing sales competitions for advisors, you need to have production contests for your technicians. So we now have a spinning wheel that we're doing prize wheels off of for both flat rate techs and service advisors. So they can earn tickets based on efficiency, multimedia usage the next time. And my advisors have some different stats. But you earn a ticket for each production level, and then you get a spin at a wheel. Maybe it's a steak dinner out for the service, the GM at the end of the month. Maybe it's $100, maybe it's $5, but you get at least get an opportunity for something.
I love that. So that's making them feel appreciated, right? And you talking to them and asking how everything's going or any other questions, right? That's them being heard, and you know, making sure that you're focused on their success. I mean, that's a great game to play. I love that. So with the increased complexity of vehicles, how can service departments improve communications between advisors and technicians to ensure accuracy of the diagnosis and efficiency of the repair?
So I think the first part is with the write-up of the repair order when the customer's coming in. When you're scheduling the appointment, make sure that the customer knows that there's a drivability concern. They're going on a test drive. That's not an option. That's a requirement for our store. My shop foreman's going to be doing the test drive with the customer. He's great with customers. And I think that really helps mitigate most issues that are not duplicable, or it's kind of an odd noise you're listening for. He's able to get it to the right person based on what he's experienced on the test drive. We also have a fuel and emissions questionnaire for our advisors to fill out with the with the customer. So okay. Up in Colorado, we got 85 octane, and that doesn't work with any of the cars out there right now. And it's an ongoing, it's a mess with these vehicles. So it's a common question for us. Where are you getting your gas? What type of gas? What octane rating gas? All that goes into it. We're having to do more fuel samples to check ethanol level because we're seeing ethanol get up to 20 you know, plus percent.
Really?
Yep.
Really?
It's not, and it causes havoc on all kinds of systems.
So all we have to deal with in the Northeast is diesel or regular, right?
Sure.
Some people put the diesel into the car that should be taken regular. But you're telling me that you have customers that are putting 85 octane in a newer vehicle that should have 89 and up or 87 and up, right?
87, 91. I have people that are putting 85 octane in a hybrid, and you're going, what are you thinking? Or a plug-in. It's amazing to me that you would go ahead and spend as much money as you're spending on a plug-in hybrid, and then you would use the cheapest available gasoline and think that that's okay, even with all the literature and signage on the car telling you don't use that type of fuel.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Thanks for sharing that. What strategies have you seen work to bridge the generational gap between seasoned technicians and these young whippersnapper advisors entering the workforce?
You know, I think part of it is I have my service shop. I have my shop foreman in my interviews for my service advisors.
Okay.
And I think that brings a different, we can really set the expectation of what our shop is. So my current shop is super young. I think my oldest guy in my shop is 32. So it's a super young shop. And so it definitely feeds off that personality. My drive is rather young. I'm the old man. And I look at it and I act like it sometimes, but I feed off of the youth that we have. I find that the youth gets a bad rap. They're definitely coachable. They just need to be given set goals and directions and expectations. So part of this issues with our stores, we have an ELR and hours per RO issue. It was there when I got there. It's been there for the last 2.5 years. Been there about 4 months. And so we're doing some different things as far as communicating what the standard is. And all of a sudden, they're hitting the standard. And because I'm always talking about it, as well as what that customer satisfaction scores. It's not acceptable not to have success with it. That we will beat district and we will beat region because we're going to be in the green. And you talk about it enough, and now we're hitting green this month. And
that's
so
awesome.
Having success.
That's great. So your strategy is really having the technician sit in with you, interviewing someone that you're thinking about hiring. And then what happens next? Do you just kind of powwow with the technician afterwards to kind of get their feel?
Yep. So, I have to make the final decision, but if my shop foreman has a bad feel, I'm definitely listening to him. I only fill half my roles that I'm filling with inexperienced and trained from scratch. And the rest I'll bring in that are experienced, but I'm listening in the interview. Why are you looking? Why are you leaving? And it can be something where they didn't feel comfortable with the selling process at that store. They thought it was too taking advantage of a customer style, and they didn't want to be a part of it. Well, I'll key in on that. That's my selling style. I'm not there to oversell anybody. I'm there to present options and provide best recommendations in order to have the longest life possible for your car. But I'm also, it's a sales job. I mean, it is selling. And if you're not comfortable with asking and talking and communicating these kinds of things, and you just want to do it by text, that doesn't work either. So you got to find that right balance. And so it's a matter of how do you like to communicate with friends? How do you like to talk to your parents?
You're asking those types of questions.
Are you only texting or are you calling? I'll send my daughter memes and Instagram and all kinds of stuff. But if she wants to talk to me, she's going to call me. And she knows that. Now, the tough part is she works nights, so sometimes it can be a little more challenging.
So you work long hours, 5 days a week. You know, let's just say bell to bell, we'll call it 7 to 7, right? Every day. How do you address conflict? Because it's going to happen within the service teams in a way that strengthens the relationship rather than creating that division, right?
I call it don't shit in the sandbox.
Okay.
And you have to live there. And if you have something that you need, that's a problem, and if it's money related, if you don't feel comfortable handling it directly with another advisor, like you think they stole a ticket or they took your opportunity or whatever, then if you don't feel like addressing it, then you can come talk to me and then I will address it. And if I can keep you out of it, I'll keep you out of it, but I'm going to address it. Now, on the flip side, I'm going to talk you through where I'm seeing, because I'm going to look and see. Because my office is right on the drive. My door is open all day long. Mm-hmm. And I hear it. They're amazed at how much I hear on the drive. And it's like, and I'll chime in. Hey, what's going on with this customer? Or what's going on with this ticket? The service manager is getting dragged into way more customer related issues at a much earlier rate, I find these days. As in a younger advisor, when I was in the business, I never wanted my service manager to have to get involved. I felt like I failed. And now it's much more the service manager is involved right in the beginning. And I think it's because the advisors are always worried about their little turf and they're not worried about the store in general. And I think that's what causes the conflict on the drive, is that they're all trying to fight for their little piece and they don't So the one part that the our pay plan is salary based, not all commission. And I think that helps alleviate some of the tension. And I think it's also, you got to be direct. If there's a problem, you've got to nip it in the bud. And if you have an advisor that doesn't fit your team dynamic and they're not willing to adapt to what your team dynamic is that you're going for, then you got to be willing to cut.
Okay. So there's a problem. You've come in and you tried to solve it and you have solved it, right? Now, how do you mend that, that hurt relationship that, let's say, for instance, the advisor is upset because the other advisor took their opportunity or stole their ticket per se? Sure. How do you strengthen those two to be, you know, seeing eye to eye and understanding, you know, where each other's coming from?
So in the end, you got to have them both in the box and the office at the same time, and you got to work it out. And I'm usually asking them, I go, I can make the decision and no one's going to be happy, or you guys can figure out how you guys are going to work this out right now in 30 seconds. How are you going to make it work? And everybody's usually willing to give something because nobody wants to lose the whole thing.
Right. Okay.
And so if Bob took John's ticket and it was worth $300 in commission, then Bob will slip him a ticket that's worth $150 and they'll split it. And bygones, bygones. Now, if it's cut and dry that it was just plain theft, then the ticket just gets flipped. If they can't come up with a decision, I flip it to myself and they both lose.
Okay. Okay. I like that. Okay. This is one that I really thought was interesting when we were talking to some of our listeners. What role does leadership play in creating a culture of shared accountability and mutual respect within the service department?
So I always tell people that at some point I'm going to get hit by a bus. And it's, whether it's a bus or a heart attack or whatever, I'm telling everybody, I'm here to figure out who's the next manager, who's the next lead advisor, and who can I coach and develop into the next person and into the next role. I would rather have to replace people because they're so good that I promote them up and out of my store and into another store. And I think that kind of culture provides them the opportunity to show themselves or showcase themselves for what their talents really are. Some people are really good salespeople, and some people are really good customer advocates. And each part is required as far as leadership, because the person that's really good at the customer advocacy and calming a customer down and flipping them into a lifelong customer can teach the person that's a great salesperson, but there's a bull-nosed shark. And okay. But having that culture there on the drive helps each of them get better in and of themselves. I'm usually a little bit more, I'm very much indirect. I'm not going to tell you have to do something, but when I'm asking you, you kind of know that you got to do it. And, but I'm trying to make it so it's you get a choice in the matter, and, or at least that the perception is there's a choice.
Okay.
I don't like being the jerk, but that is the role. But also it's my job to make sure I guide them to be successful. That's my job to make sure that I'm showing them how to do a job easier, how to be more successful at the job, and me showing them how to do it. My expectation is that they're going to show the person that joins the team later and that they're going to help develop them, and them showing that they can do it too makes it so they're more likely to be advocated for to get another promotion or another role opportunity later on also.
Okay. So shifting gears a little bit, let's go into third gear and talk about technology, right? The advancement of technology has reshaped how service departments operate, how we function. How can teams work together to stay ahead of the curve and adopt to new tools and new processes efficiently?
So I am an early engager for technology. I remember when AT&T was trying to put a thing on the side of my house to broadcast over the air my TV and my phone. And I signed up for it and I called them up like a few months later because it didn't get installed. And they're like, I found out we couldn't install it on your house. I'm like, what do you mean? There's too many trees. you saw the trees. I lived in a huge, and they're like, and so they're trying to do line of sight to a tower that was 2 miles away, and they couldn't get it done. But it was really, I mean, it's all over the place, that type of technology now. But for me, if you're not willing to adapt to the new tools and opportunities that are out there to provide the information quicker, a better quality, then the job's passed you by. If you can't adapt to what the technology is at now for a check-in, the way customers want to be communicated with, staying updated. I mean, the easiest piece of technology we have is every advisor has a cell phone that, and I rarely find them, A, not on it on their own time, which is personal business, but not utilizing it for business. So if I told Susie that I was going to call her at 10 o'clock, why am I not telling the Google AI or Apple or whatever, hey, remind me to call Susie at 10 o'clock so that my phone's telling me, hey, do this. It's not that you need the computer to do it. You have your phone that's with you all the time. You may not be at the desk when it's time for you to give them a call. And so use your phone to be your reminding system. I think that's probably one of the easiest things of technology that we have that we just do not utilize. I mean, it's great that we take the pictures of the cameras to reduce expense and exposure and tell the customer, hey, we're looking out for you and us. But sending the multi-point inspection, and if you're not sending a digital inspection and you're not combining fixed pictures or video with it to the customer, you're doing yourself a disservice and you're doing your customer a disservice. Somebody's going to take your customer because at some point they're going to have to stop somewhere else. They're going to get that as far as their treatment level, and they're going to change who's their service provider just because you wouldn't adapt to what a technology is available. These platforms aren't super expensive, and they're becoming a necessary requirement for the business.
So if I hear you correctly, you either adapt or you die.
You're going to be a dinosaur. Right.
You can be a dinosaur. Okay. I like that. Training. It's often talked about, right? And sometimes it's geared towards individual roles within the dealership. In your mind, how can dealerships implement team-wide training programs that enhance collaboration and understanding across all the roles?
So I think, so we use EasyCare for our group and everything, and big advocate. I think it gives people outside of the service manager doing the modeling, it gives a third-party advocacy role to the dealer group as far as these are the minimum standards, and that it helps people have a consistent message and a consistent process for modeling behavior as far as check-in process and taking care of the customer through the transaction cycle. I think that's the biggest one. For the technicians, I think the biggest thing is that the expectation of their online training as well as the advisor's online training is 100%. It doesn't matter. So you can't work in my shop and you can't work on my drive unless your K dealer, your Kia training is done. You can't do those roles unless your safety training is done. And you can't do those roles unless you got your base coverage of Kia technician training done. I'll pay you for the 1 day, 3 days, 7 days, whatever it is for you to get those things done. I want those things done and out of the way so that you can focus on the job. Because otherwise, I'm taking you out to take away from actual engagement with on-the-job training to actually learn the role that you're being hired for. But I'm also, if I have to ask for permission to send a technician to school, then I'm really probably not the right fit for your group. My technicians go to school. And if I'm not sending, if I know at this store, I have about a 2-year cycle to get my technicians trained. But they all know they're getting trained. And they know with their training level increases, they get pay raises also for their flat rate time, like a 5% unapplied rate to down to about a 2.5% because I reduced the amount of hourly techs. I only have 2 hourly techs in my shop now. I've moved my express team to a flat rate shop.
Wow.
And they're flagging 80 to 150 hours of pay period.
That's amazing. So,
and they got a raise because they did it. So they got $2 an hour more and they're now flagging and they have an opportunity to make more money than they thought they could. And some of the income levels are big jumps for them. So for me, I'd rather pay somebody more, have them do training and be actively engaged just as much as I am as far as the production quality and care of the team.
That's awesome. I love that. So what matrix or feedback systems can leaders use to gauge how the team is doing and also to identify areas of opportunity within the service department?
So I have a non-working shop foreman. So he is both my mouthpiece and my feedback piece back to me for my shop. I don't care. I mean, even with me doing one or two laps through the shop and fixing problems left and right when I first got there and making sure we made good on promises made as a group to the shops, to the technicians and the advisors that were there, I'm still not their number one go-to guy to fix a problem or that there's an issue. Clemente is, who's my shop foreman, and I will never undercut my shop foreman. If I do that, then I've screwed up the system. So I count on him to provide feedback to me, and therefore I'm required to go back through him to communicate to my techs. I'll say hi, and I'll see if you want to grab some lunch sometime. I'll bring in breakfast burritos. But in reality, it's going to be going through Clemente, and I know it is. And I'm okay with that. That's part of what we have set up as far as our systems. But the thing is that when you hear about a problem, you immediately attack it as if it is a customer lighting your ass up on a KSI survey. I mean, it is it's more important than a customer survey. Because if you don't fix your shop and keep your shop and your drive happy, your customers are never going to be happy because they're the ones who are providing the service to the customer. So if they're unhappy, you're not going to have a happy customer. I thought right. The guy with Virgin Airlines, take care of your customer, your employees, and your employees will take care of your guest.
Yeah, I love that quote. Can you share an example of a service department team that successfully turned things around through better collaboration? And what were the keys that made the difference?
I think, both Kia stores have been really good transition turnarounds. Both stores, once the first store had a more of a dictator service manager prior to me getting there. And I never actually would met him or work with him in that role. I just kind of heard about the feedback when I got there. A lot of promises were made with us doing the buy sell. And here I am walking in, and one of the first things we're having to deal with is paternity leave. And it's like, you have to be with the group for a year before you get paternity leave, because we have a pretty good paternity policy. It's 60 days paid. Wow. So I think it's a big deal for us, for our techs and our advising staff. But on the flip side, it's figuring out you have to break down the silos. And so you've got to get people communicating. So I work really, really well hand in glove with my parts manager and make sure that that relationship between those two departments is one of advocacy for the guest. It can't be confrontational. You can have some processes or policies that can make it feel like it's difficult, but it's really in the long-term guest. It's long-term interest of the group for profitability, but two, it's long-term for the guest. If the guest prepays for a part, the guest is more likely to get their car fixed. They right. have nothing in the game if they don't prepay. And so you think this negative is really a positive for both the advisor, because the advisor is more likely to get the car back to get the work done and get paid on it.
Yeah. So Alec, we're right up against the time, but I want to jump into our lightning round before I let you go. Okay. What are your three takeaways in your mind, anyone listening that can take away from this episode and really put into action?
So walk your shop floors and your departments that you touch every day and make sure that you're available, make yourself available. Walk your lot, make sure you're not seeing cars sitting in the same parking space more than 3 days. And third thing is make sure that you and your shop foreman and you and your parts manager talk to each other every single day away from everybody else, so you guys can have an opportunity to fix things that might be percolating in the background.
Okay. How can people get in touch with you, Alec?
I'm on LinkedIn. You can always I can give my cell phone. It hasn't changed in 30 years, and I ain't going to change it. But always feel free to reach out to me. LinkedIn's the easiest, but you can always call or text me, 816-520-7894.
Awesome. Thank you. EasyCare is a total performance provider working alongside your team to help achieve your goals in F&I and across the dealership. We are an award-winning provider and administrator of F&I products and can provide the tools, knowledge, and training needed to help unlock the potential of your dealership. For more information on EasyCare or to be a guest on Forward, please feel free to send me an email at csmith@afcoholdings.com. Alec, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being a part of this episode. And I'll ask this last question, like I ask every guest. Will you please come back?
Absolutely. Thanks, Corey. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Forward, a podcast brought to you by EasyCare with Corey Smith. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. New episodes are released on the 5th and 20th of every month.